right? So it's, there's not a level where you can interact with people that you don't feel comfortable sexually with. It's not something you can actively disagree on and have huge radio arguments about, except on this show.
So this makes a lot more sense. I mean, so, you know, the idea of going over to, like, my friend's house and have, like, a bunch of us guys sit around and drink beers and then, like, watch sports and then kind of, like, punch each other and wrestle a little bit is okay. So long as it's in the sort of sports context. That's interesting. So,
I'd like to ask another question about your porn collection. Have you made any progress on the gay DVD front?
Oh my God! Yes, I actually have, and we should certainly talk about that. Let's just push that on the stack for just a moment. But yes, I went and purchased several fabulous gay and bisexual, and even one straight DVD, I think, in order to totally experience the and it was fabulous. Well, we can talk about it now, or actually you can explain this boxing scoring thing, which actually really bothers me. How is it that the fans thought that Quaxor won?
And Lewis.
And the fans thought that Lewis won, and the judge didn't? I mean, look, so you get a point.
Lewis landed like three times as many jabs as Holyfield did, but here's the way scoring, if it's not actually won by knockout, here's the way scoring in boxing actually works. It's 10 points for winning the round, 9 points for not winning the round, and if you lose the round by and also were knocked down during it, you only get 8 points. So in fact, it's like 1 point for winning, 0 points for losing, and a bonus point for the winner for getting scoring a knockdown, but they have to phrase it in terms of scores that can actually come out near 150 just so that it looks like neat things are going on with the scoring.
I see. Is it actually sort of mathematically equivalent to negative 1, 0, and 1, or is, you know, 2/8?
Yes, kind of, yeah.
It appears to be a linear transformation.
I mean, is it indeed? I mean, it seems like, you know...
Yeah. So there's simply no measure of how much you won the round by. It's simply a point for winning.
Oh, okay.
That's the only swing. So even though Lewis lands three times the number of... Yeah.
But the freakish little fans must be keeping track on their scorecards, right? Or are they just saying...
Well, so I read today that the referee who judged the thing actually believed that Lewis had won, but he'd been scoring on a round-by-round basis, so hadn't realized how it added up to be a draw.
Yeah, that is true.
But what if he had realized it? I mean, it was technically a draw. I mean, nobody thinks that Lewis won, right? You're just saying that he fought harder or something.
No, and everyone simply thinks he had Holyfield's measure throughout the entire fight. And the fact that it came out to a draw in the final scoring is actually quite a controversy and seems to only be making money for Don King, as usual.
I mean, this is an indictment of the scoring system, then, not of the judge, right?
No, and also of the judges for having put so many rounds in Holyfield's favor despite
judges assigned the scores incorrectly.
Right.
Oh, I see. I thought it was totally obvious at each round who won the round. But no, you're saying...
Oh, no, that's a complete judgment call.
Oh.
On a round-by-round basis, it's a complete judgment call. The fact that the point spread can't also reflect how much you won the round by only exacerbates that. But really, it's the judgment call of it all that's keeping boxing from joining all of the other sports in the pantheon of sexual sublimation.
wait, all the other sports? Like, is golf about sexual sublimation?
Really big sticks. You make the call.
So, I mean, do you think there will ever be, you know, pansexual boxing, like men fighting women?
That's probably going to go the same way as men versus women in tennis, where it seems like the same level of power is being delivered if you only watch women versus women and men versus men. But in fact, the swing when you match up the two sexes cannot be accounted for yet by simple training.
Well, wait a second. I think society has a big taboo about men beating up on women unless there's some complicated, you know, consent beforehand. I mean, we talk a lot on the show about, you know, BDSM and building up consent, but somehow that doesn't seem present in boxing. I have trouble seeing intergender boxing becoming really a popular thing.
Frankly, it would make me a bit squeamish myself.
Well, boxing in general makes me squeamish, okay? So I can't really judge it on those grounds.
But certainly at some point it should become fair, like if it were one man against three women. Right.
Or well, we call that mud wrestling, actually. So,
I was going to say, if the woman had weapons or like some really cool little shiny suits.
She does have weapons.
We may be getting into American Gladiators there.
Or Jerry Springer. I'm not sure.
Okay, so what's going to happen? Can this score be appealed?
There is the Justice Department is actually stepping in. That's from my understanding.
Is that a joke or are you serious?
No, there's a heavy investigation on several fronts to determine whether the fix really is just to make Don King more money.
Why does he make money?
If there's a rematch, he gets to make another $40 million.
Oh, fascinating.
So it's in his best interest to keep everything up in the air for as long as possible. That seems quite obvious.
And because there was a draw, the two fighters get to split the purse, is that right?
I don't know actually where that money goes, but the unification of the trophies still has not occurred. Which was supposed to be the big deal is that there's three different federations and there was supposed to finally be one winner of all the federations and they could just say he's the guy from now on, and now that still hasn't happened. So yet another rematch to make everything happen.
Can we get some sexual content going here?
Well, you can
smacking people around and beating them? I don't know. That's
maybe. Let me just remind the viewers that they can call us and inject their own sexual content into this show. 621-WRCT is the phone number. We could segue to our next topic, which is, of course, Gay Jeans Day. I see most of you are wearing jeans. I am not wearing jeans because I've decided I am the next millennia's most glamorous homosexual. Heterosexual. I couldn't really decide. I decided that, you know, I was gonna start do positive affirmations. I told myself, you know, every day I would wake up and say, "You are the century's most glamorous homosexual," and that would, just by repetition of this mantra, it would become true.
So I'm confused as to how this applies to your choice to wear or not wear jeans on this Gay Jeans Day.
Well, okay, it doesn't actually, but I don't know. To remind our viewers what this is. I don't even know what it is. This is like
it's a publicity stunt, pure and simple.
So the kind of homosexual powers that be decided to put on some kind of event for the campus, and you're supposed to wear jeans if you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, multi.
Oh, I think well, or supportive. It's anyone who's supportive of right. Anything.
And so, it's,
you know, this is a several year tradition at this point.
And they do it here, but it's been going on at campuses all over the country for years and years. It came late here to CMU.
And so they do it every semester,
every year.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the idea, there's some kind of like complicated prisoner's dilemma box that you have to draw because, you know, you might be supportive but forget, you might not be supportive, and then, you know, you might not know, you might wear jeans anyway.
There's all kinds of signaling problem.
And so if someone's wearing jeans, you have no idea whether they're supportive or not. And if they're not wearing jeans,
you still have no idea.
Right, they could simply be forget, which is the entire point. It's a clever co-opting of the natural student attire to
interesting,
which is the point. Idea, I believe, is interesting. And then just to make people think about this issue.
But there's all this kind of painful rhetoric that I'm forced to read because it fills up the B words every time this thing comes around, which is like, you know, the daily act of your putting on your jeans, you know, you don't even think about it, it's so natural to you. Well, you know, that is how oppressive your heterosexual marginalization is to me. I mean, I don't even get the argument exactly, but it's something like, you know, your heterosexuality is so natural to you that you don't even think about it. You know, if you are forced to, like, confront the very act of engineering yourself, you know, I can't even describe the argument because it doesn't make any sense to me. But I think the idea is to turn this commonplace act into something people notice, so that they realize the painful struggle that homosexuals are going through. every day.
Something like that. Yeah.
So in fact, I'm not wearing jeans, but I was wearing ribbons all day. I had the denim ribbon, the rainbow ribbon, and the pink ribbon.
Yeah, fabulous.
I've completely lost track at this point.
So that probably indicates to anyone who is trying to figure out that you are at least a supporter of something.
Right, you're
just a generally supportive person, I guess.
Right, so it was actually, I did find myself, though, as people walked by, and there was definitely more khaki than usual, I think. I mean, there's definitely some kind of khaki counter clothing thing going on. But as people were walking by, I was like, jeans. Didn't know about him. And I was looking scornfully at people with no jeans, unless they were, like, dressed really fabulously, in which case it was obvious that they would never wear jeans, because it was just not...
I'm not sure if this was one of the first years that Gay Jeans Day was on campus. It was 2 or 3 years ago that the Student Republicans ran Straight Slacks Day, I believe it was. Right. And this year, now there's a different counterproposal, the Heterosexual Shirt Day.
Yes, we're looking at
which seems to have a much better humor about it than the the Student Republican rhetoric was just as impenetrable that year. And and simply served to stand them further out from the crowd when the few that actually did take part in it.
Yeah, I think this is the College Republicans. I think this was sort of a pretty damaging to them in terms of their reputation, because it just seemed sort of close-minded and hateful of them.
Spiteful.
And the implication that there are not gay Republicans was especially vivid. So yeah, this is just meant to be amusing. So wear any kind of shirt to show your support. Shirts, sweaters, blouses, sweatshirts, or anything will do.
Now, unfortunately, I've already missed doing it because of that. I just wore a shirt for no particular reason today.
Oh, this is
and
well, that was today.
And didn't find
March 16. Is that today?
That is
today.
And didn't find the poster until coming into the studio this evening.
Interesting.
Gee, and I would have been supportive of heterosexuality too if I had known.
I was deliberately thinking about Gay Jeans Day today, and I chose to wear jeans, a blue denim shirt, and a pink T-shirt.
And I did actually see one person in the student center with a purple triangle on his head.
Oh.
Stuck to a stocking cap.
That would be McKelly.
Yes, this is he was being tinky winky.
That's correct.
Do the student queer groups, if you will, does this generate a lot of student interest? Do they get a lot of email? Do they get a lot of posts to their B board?
We do get a fair amount of response to this and to several other posters we've had out at this time. You mentioned Tinky Winky, and we recently had posters out questioning the relationship between Bert and Ernie of Sesame Street fame.
Oh, really?
Which generated, in my mind at least, a surprising amount of controversy from people wanting to inform us that no, actually, Bert and Ernie did not have a gay love relationship. The people apparently took this far more seriously than
did. They're probably at that phase where Sesame Street is still really important to them.
I would imagine so, I suppose.
So this is coming like in the form of like hate mail into the seeing you out
some
email
of it,
account?
Some of it, this was to allies, and some of it did take the form of hate mail, I guess you could call it. There were certain people that were very upset about the fact that we had used their heroes, I suppose, in this way. But a fair amount of it was strictly of an informative nature, that they wanted to let us know that apparently the producers or somebody from Sesame Street had visited CMU in the past, or recently, I suppose, and they had this question had come up, and they had taken this opportunity.
But, I mean, come on. I mean, this is, a standard axiom of deconstructionism. Is, you have to look beyond the author's intent. The author's intent is actually irrelevant when you look for any kind of subtext.
I suppose that's true. Of course, whether or not Bert and Ernie do have some sort of relationship is actually kind of irrelevant to our point. I think the social reaction to it was far more important from our point of view.
Do these people sign their letters, or do they all come from like anonymous Hotmail accounts?
No, they were all signed, all from Andrew accounts.
Interesting.
So,
excuse me, why today is Keijin's day?
Why?
As opposed to why not some other day?
Yeah, it's because March or something.
I don't think there's any specific.
Certainly not commemorating any great day in denim history.
Now I'm going to have to go look that up.
I feel ashamed that I don't know this, of course, but I don't think it has any special.
Now, if you've been watching the B-Boys, do you have any better feel then for what which side of the agenda people seem to be looking at when they continue to have Gay Jeans Day every day? Is it supposed to be like, look at all these people wearing jeans, now you don't know, kind of get used to us kind of thing? Or is it supposed to be more intended as a put on your jeans, thinking about it, kind of?
I think the intent was to make it provocative so that people would think about the issue themselves. It's become, or at least the reaction, the public reaction has been one of people wanting to signal or being afraid of signaling their sexual desires or preferences to other people, which may be the intent of some people. I mean, I don't really know what the initial intent of it was, since it was begun before my time.
No, this is more a question of, like, from reading the B-Boys, what are people projecting as being the intent now? It has been going for quite some time, so really there's no way of judging.
Yeah, well, I think people
and
are,
the whole shift in gay pride has overcome the duration of this event going on on campuses throughout the country. So what are people now projecting to be the effort for continuing it?
I think the perception is that it's done to perhaps as a way of coming out or expressing your publicly recognizing your sexual preference. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the way that the response, at least publicly, has been.
Among other things, if you're closeted and trying to get out, you know, maybe wearing jeans that day won't really out you to anybody who sees, you know, people wearing jeans, or more likely doesn't even think about this. They read the poster and they went on with their life, but it could be an easy first step
to take. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Interesting.
Personally, I choose to signal my sexual preferences by talking about them on a radio show.
I prefer to signal my sexual preferences by going to bars and watching hockey.
or boxing.
Or boxing, yes. Whichever one's horse racing.
Hmm. Well, horses, they're routinely
horses.
Uniformly recognized symbol of certain things.
So, the painful irony of signaling one's sexual preferences via jeans or radio, I mean, is, I think what people don't realize who are sort of, whatever their sexual preference is, people who are closeted, you know, seem to think that it's this, like, incredible secret. And, you know, once people find out, you know, well, not only will their friends and family be shocked, but there will be, like, this whole, like, world of sexual partners, you know, there's a whole world of people waiting to have sex with them once they signal their sexual proclivities. And as I've learned painfully and the hard way, you know, I don't think there's any stone left unturned in my own sex life. And yet, you know, despite the fact that I broadcast my proclivities on, you know, this 8,000-watt radio station, nothing has changed in my sex life except, you know,
Tuesday evenings are a little duller.
Right. I mean, I can't even get anybody to call in. 621-WRCT is the phone number. And so I think that's sort of sad that, in some sense, you know, you spend all this time carefully guarding the secret, and once you finally let it go, it turns out that nobody cares.
Well, I don't know. I think that has something to do with the fact that many of the people in this room live in an ivory tower. That, you know, I'm certainly lucky that, you know, my sexual preferences, no one really cares. I'm in a, you know, in a department in a field where that has a tradition of being extremely liberal, and, you know, no one really cares, you know, how many people I date or what their genders are or anything like that. And it's very hard to shock people. I think that maybe out there in the so-called real world, things are different. If we were, say, in southern Alabama, I wonder if you could, you know, broadcast such a secret to the world and have no one care.
Mm-hmm. That's, and whether or not people care publicly is very different from whether or not they care privately, and you see the results indirectly of their reaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose that's a good point. I mean, I've actually been wondering whether when I start going on the job search, if I should suppress the 3-year Loveline archive for my webpage at least until after that my probationary period is over.
It's a tough call. Bringing job searching into it is a whole host of other little hang-ups and things you think work and little behaviors that you're going to try to modify about yourself. So it's combining the two of them. It's just, I'm sure it's a nightmare.
Yes, and I know that my coworkers at my job know about my doing this show, and it makes me nervous sometimes, but I keep telling myself that I'm doing this in an effort to be open about my sexuality, and yes, this includes being open about it to my coworkers, even though it makes me nervous.
Although, I mean, you work at a high-tech startup, so...
Yes, it's a lot safer than...
It's a safer environment
than an Alabama bank.
Yeah. Poultry packing.
It's important to realize that we're sheltered in some useful and maybe helpful ways, but that we lead a somewhat sheltered existence.
Yeah, some fields are definitely more accepting than others.
Well, except you know, I hate to play devil's advocate here, but I think we need to have some poultry packers on the show because you know, you're offering this from your own hypothetical ivory tower point of view. You know, I bet there are other fields which I've never worked in, you know, which are much more oppressive than my own. You know, I mean, you're hardly speaking from experience.
Oh, I admit that certainly.
I mean, it certainly seems likely that if you wanted to work your way up the corporate ladder at, you know, Philip Morris or some very conservative kind of big company, I guess you'd want to suppress your lifestyle a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I never hear about...
Well, okay, I can give anecdotal evidence about EDS, Ross Perot's firm, in which you could get fired for... having hair that reached your collar. For reference, my hair reaches my nipples. I wouldn't be accepted that.
That's the hair from your head. Got it.
I was had a bizarre picture.
So yes, I think it's very reasonable to doubt that. My kinkiness would be a good thing to mention there.
Our competitor is ahead of us in this area as well. The HBO show is called Out at Work, and it's actually simply another tabloid show, just of horror stories of the homosexual lifestyle conflicting with work requirements, and sometimes eye-opening, sometimes just really boring.
This is a series?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Every week they...
I'm not sure how often it is. I've seen at least... I've flipped past at least 2 or 3 different anecdotes ongoing. But I'm not really sure what the frequency is.
So, there were 3 things in our agenda, and I'm trying to remember what the third thing was.
Your tape, DVD.
Oh, yes, of course.
Let's get to the good stuff.
So,
explain multiple angles to me.
Right, so first we have to start with the technology. One of the innovations of DVD was supposedly this multiple angle technology. What it basically means is that when these people film a movie... They can have several cameras going, and they'll be recording the same scene from different angles, and they'll record them in, you know, essentially in logically parallel tracks on the DVD. So if you're watching some scene and you want to like see it from a different angle, you press the angle change button on your remote, and all the remotes have angle change. It's a standard feature of the DVD, and you can see the same scene from different angles. Or you know, imagine watching, you know, Casablanca from multiple angles.
actually seems like it would be perfect for porn when bodies are obscuring the things you really want to see.
Yes, yes, exactly. And so it seemed like a fabulous idea. And so I went to this new adult bookstore on McKnight Road. I don't know if you're familiar.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah.
The balloon. I didn't see a balloon.
Yeah. It has all glass windows in the front.
And a lot of neon.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. It seemed...
We went by there on Saturday, though we didn't stop, and they had the large inflated balloon, like a hot air balloon, advertising grand opening.
Oh, fascinating. It was very nice and very genteel in there. And actually, it's not open 24 hours, as far as I can tell. They close at like 11 or midnight or something.
Oh, okay.
And it was very clean, and there were females in there, and there were couples shopping. It was very unlike the usual kind of seedy adult bookstore vibe that I'm so used to.
Yes, well, we've talked about that store before on the show and made just those observations.
Oh, really?
I agree.
Oh, I hadn't been there, so maybe I just had tuned you out while you were talking about it. But so I went there looking for DVDs, and I was actually sort of disappointed because they only had a couple, and they were kind of lame. And so I had to order them from mail order from this fabulous website, DVD Empire, and its sister website, Adult DVD Empire, based in Mars, PA. You support your local merchants. And what I really liked about the way their website was organized is that you could search really easily. You picked your fetish. And, you know, gay was classified as a fetish. I don't need to quibble about that. And then you pick your format. So if I pick gay and then click on multi-angle, you know, I get the 17 gay DVDs that are multi-angle. And so this is very efficiently helped me find exactly what I wanted. And so I ended up getting Bi and Beyond, number 3, I think, Bisexual and Beyond. And Wee Ho Alley. I don't know why it was called Wee Ho Alley, but, you know, that was a gay one. And then I got...
Maybe they're raising crops in between buildings. That's it.
WeHo is West Hollywood.
So. Oh.
Oh,
okay. Another mystery solved. Fabulous.
As a Southern Californian, I get that particular insight.
Us Easterners we're just stupid.
Wow, fabulous. And so, and then I got something else called mouth organ. They blow themselves.
A frightening expose of the harmonica industry.
I'm sure.
And they were, well, actually, mouth organ wasn't too bad, but the other two were just terrible. I'm sorry, but Wee Ho Alley was the lamest porn video I've ever bought. I mean, I guess, you know, you should read reviews of these things before buying them, but the multi-angle thing was actually really interesting because they when you press the angle button, you would get a similar scene that was kind of eerily reminiscent of the one you were watching, but it wasn't the same. Like, for example, you know, there was some scene where these two guys were outside and they were having some kind of sexual act. Like, I think one guy was kneeling and giving the other guy a blowjob. Can I say blowjob in the air? I don't know. So I pressed the angle button, and suddenly it's, like, a lot lighter, and they're doing something sort of different. But it's the same guys, you know. And so it wasn't what you in order for this technology to work properly, you need to press the angle button and see exactly the same thing happening, but, you know, you've zoomed in or you've moved to a different spot. It doesn't really work if it's just a similar scene. In fact, the most egregious example of this was these two guys were in a bedroom having sex, and you press the multi-angle feature, and then one of them changed into a different actor. And it was just really disturbing. You could switch back and forth between, you know, person A and his like pseudo duplicate, and it was very disappointing. And so and Bi and Beyond was even worse. They actually had an entirely unrelated video going on the alternate track. You know, it was just like some random. It was like, you know, porn footage so lame that it couldn't make it into the movie. It was just like, you know, this guy sort of like unenergetically licking this woman's nipples, and you know, I didn't need to see that. Right? It just.
The cynic in me assumes that the manufacturers of this first West Hollywood video, you know, were looking at camera rental prices and decided that really, in fact, renting or buying 3 cameras and hiring 3 people to hold the cameras was just a little much. Or how is it 3 angles?
Or I don't know what the upper limit number is. It's at least 3. Right. So.
And that, you know, paying these two gentlemen to have sex multiple times was just a cheaper out.
Well, yeah, and also just advertising your disc as multi-angle, even if it's really, even if it violates the spirit of the multi-angle concept, I mean, it makes sense to me, I suppose, but I just felt cheated as the consumer.
This is exactly like I feel cheated during action movies when there's the big explosion and then they run out of special effects budget, so you see exactly the same explosion two more times, just from different angles. So I don't know if that's the same problem or a completely opposite problem, but it's
different kind of explosion.
Yeah, I guess yeah. But they did the same thing, right? When you
that horrible Gina Davis movie with the where she played a pirate was just
Cutthroat Island.
Cutthroat Island. There were at least three of those in the first 20 minutes of the movie that I watched, and then I just said I couldn't take it anymore, and I had to turn it off.
I think I like leading a life with lower expectations.
So are you saying you liked Cutthroat Island?
I did actually watch Cutthroat Island, but that would not... The reuse of explosion footage would not be enough. But... I'm actually a little bit resentful because you've made me remember Gina Davis. Like, has she ever been in anything that hasn't been totally execrable?
Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice. Was she not in Earth Girls Are Easy, or am I getting her confused with somebody
Tootsie.
Else?
Tootsie.
Tootsie.
All right, it was a very minor role in Tootsie. It was her very first speaking role, but she was there, and she was in her underwear. So, for the rest of us, at least.
621-WRCT, please call in, share your thoughts and ideas. You had a comment?
Oh, no, I was wondering, are we allowed to discuss prices on the air? How much did it cost you to be this disappointed?
I think we can discuss prices on the
yeah,
air.
Yeah, I'm sure we can.
I don't know. So I was hoping to rent these things, but I was thwarted, so I actually had to buy them. Luckily, DVD prices are not too bad, although they were a little high. I think it was in the 30s I paid for each disc. Some can be as low as 20, some can be as high as 40 or 50, but something
that
like that.
That sounds very comparable to adult video prices I've seen.
They're generally 50% higher than normal video prices.
I think they're more than that. Judge because I don't shop for videos on the web.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, if you, Cutthroat Island is like $89, right?
If you get it at the first release, I mean, you wait 6 months and it's like $20.
Yeah, I'm not looking at anything that costs more than $25.
I see. Mm-hmm. There's certainly no reason to own porn. I mean, I can't personally watch a porn movie more than a couple of times before. I mean, there's something about the anticipation of not quite knowing what's going to happen next that makes it sexually appealing to me. And so the idea of owning a big library of porn doesn't really make sense to me. I mean, I'd much rather rent these things if I could. And
I would be willing to own a porn movie that was really fabulous for me, but so much of the porn that I've watched is, even the porn that's been highly recommended from people I think are reasonably trustworthy, it's just so horrible that I would hesitate to pay for a movie that I haven't already seen.
Horrible in what way? Describe.
Fails to turn me on because of the bad acting or failing to appeal to my gut or some combination of such factors.
Well, we can begin right away with bad acting. Has there ever been a really well-acted porn movie ever?
I have heard assertions that there were during the 70s, and that video basically made that uneconomical.
Okay, so this is the area that the Mark Wahlberg movie
Boogie Nights
is covering, where there was the transition from film Super 16 to video and amateurs. I was hoping somebody that had seen the movie the whole way through would carry me through that conversation, because I had to leave about halfway through the movie.
I've seen the movie, but I've certainly read criticism that claims that sure, the world tries to portray the 70s as the era of truly artistic, worthwhile porn, but in fact, it wasn't all that great. I don't know. Yeah, I haven't seen enough 70s porn to really be able to tell you.
I have not seen all that many movies, but the few that I've seen, such as Behind the Green Door, to pick a specific example, just annoyed me. I wanted to smack everyone and walk out.
Yeah, well, behind the green door was not all that entertaining.
I mean, it seems from a, and also from a purely objectivist standpoint, you know, you could, if all this 70s footage was so great, some enterprising producer would be transferring it to videotape and renting it right now if there was indeed.
And people do, in fact.
It is on video.
I rented behind the green door.
So
I'm sure The Devil and Miss Jones is still available.
Yes.
it is indeed.
And do you know offhand why, what made these canonical hits like, you know, Deep Throat and the ones you mentioned so memorable in people's minds? I mean, was there just less porn back then? I mean,
I think there was less porn, and I also think that the stars of these movies are still around and are promoting those movies very well. Perhaps I'm cynical to think that, but, you know, Annie Sprinkle is doing a wonderful job of self-promotion, and, you know, I don't begrudge her that, but I think that's one of the reasons why there's this myth, true or false, I can't judge, that 70s porn is really very good stuff.
Mm-hmm. What was Annie Sprinkle in?
I should remember, but I don't.
The Now and Failure Plague is just running rampant through this room this evening, I can tell.
That it occasionally achieved higher levels than that it occasionally achieved higher levels than the currently available.
Yes, I mean, it's sort of interesting. I mean, it's interesting that you know, so pornography is presumably a bigger business now, and I mean, I'm surprised that they still haven't perfected the formula that maximizes my own sexual objective function, right? I mean, so many porn movies that I watch, they're close, but if they were just a little bit less dumb, or, you know, or whatever, or if the sex were just a little bit more inventive, they would be great. And so it seems like
it may be that intelligent objective sex costs money.
I don't think I said intelligent.
Well, less dumb.
Oh, I guess maybe I did. I mean, it just seems like, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't necessarily need great acting or great plot, but just...
Well, I think that the porn industry lacks the sort of feedback mechanisms that, say, a Hollywood studio has, right? A Hollywood studio, there are a few movies out there, and you can measure how many people go to each one and sort of, you know, learn what makes people show up at movies and what makes people not show up at movies. And in fact, you can do all these focus groups. Whereas if you're in a field with sort of 3,000 movies a year, I think it's much harder to get good information on what's actually good and what's actually not, because you can't turn on a movie review show and sort of see the reviews of the 5 new movies that are out this week.
Now, on the other hand, there are entire magazines devoted towards reviewing adult movies. So there is...
But I think there's a serious question of objectivity for many of those magazines, I think.
Well, yes.
Well, but they have to follow the money to some extent. I mean, presumably studios get feedback in terms of the receipts that they take in for movies and rentals and sales, things like that. That should give them some indicator of which movies are more popular than others. They'd want to adapt themselves to producing movies of that type.
The difference in the distribution mechanism then would explain that, where major studios distribute their films to theaters, and then it's a portion of the gate that comes back to the studio, whereas in porn, it's simply you make the movie and you immediately just sell the whole thing.
But somebody must track video sales. I mean, even if it's the stores, if it's the porn shops that are... The adult video stores that are,
but somehow the fact that it's getting shoved out the door as soon as it's done does still indicate that the only focus group that has seen it so far is the director.
Yeah, that's
pretty and true. I mean, he thought it was good enough, so, or at least worth this much money, so off it goes.
Are there, by the way, still adult drive-ins and adult theaters that people can go to, like in Pittsburgh, for example, or is it just...
There is still one Peep Show house on Liberty downtown.
Mm-hmm. My Peep Show?
It's a video Peep Show, right? It's not an actual traditional. I have yet to find a real peep show.
I'm not even talking about peep show necessarily, although that's interesting. I'm talking about an actual movie theater where they show, you know, you sit in your seat, where, you masturbate, some kind of guy in a trench coat touches you in an uncomfortable way, and the police come.
I really don't know. It's so cheap to just get live girls these days that...
I'm under the vague impression that there's one on the north side.
All the spaces that you'd think would be the right size for that kind of thing have actually been filled with adult bars, it seems to me.
What do you mean by adult bars? You mean some kind of
strip clubs? Like dances, strip clubs, yeah.
Well, some of the spaces that used to be devoted towards that sort of thing have been turned into the cultural district downtown.
Right, the cultural district has encroached on the couple of blocks of Liberty that used to be the standout, and the places that remain now become the more booth-oriented ones, I would guess, where that Jim discussed a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
That he used to work at. So it just seems that there's a lot of the way it is necessary to cram more people through your shop in a given amount of time has kind of driven the industry away from large theaters.
Well, I would also guess that the advent of video, that many people don't really want to be the part of this anonymous community when they're watching porn. And so the advent of video to make it possible to watch porn all by yourself has driven large group porn watching out of business.
Yeah.
And it's a shame in some sense. I mean, there was a positive social benefit to all that kind of, you know.
Now be honest. How closely did you want to sit to everyone else in the same theater? If every other seat is going to be empty, the owner is looking around saying, "Hey, every other seat is empty. You know, if I put walls in between each of these seats, I would fill all of them, and they'd never know."
Yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm missing the thrust of your argument. In your movie-going world, you don't have like some cloaked man sitting next to you, touching your thigh, and I mean.
No.
So I assume that this is the key aspect of most adult theaters is that there's, you know, massive closeted homosexual activity going on, you know, even at straight porn theaters. Am I wrong?
I'm quite sure you're correct.
Porn theater, I can't judge.
You know, I'm gonna have to make this pledge to our listeners because I feel we're really failing them here. By next week, we're gonna have to do some serious research. So if this the adult theater you're talking about on the north side is still open, we'll have to go there. And there's these peep shows in Monroeville. Peter was talking about.
Not that they're down in
downtown.
Well, those you were talking about, but Peter was also talking about when Jim was here.
Oh
yes.
No, I don't know.
Murraysville, I believe.
Oh, Murraysville. That's right.
So this is my pledge to you, the viewers, that by next week, I will have gone to the adult theater, I will have gone to Murraysville, and I will have gone to, I've gone back to this fabulous adult bookstore on McKnight Road, and.
Now these peep shows are their video peep shows.
Well, one in Murraysville is apparently actors.
It is.
Like Jim.
Yeah.
You're actually on some kind of little Lazy Susan spinning around.
Really.
While
men.
People in their little cubicles are watching you and masturbating.
Men and women.
Oh, I see.
You were called the Madonna video, pay your money for the window to be open in front of you so that you can see the act without noticing anybody near you.
Right.
So that is a reality.
Interesting. I've always wanted to see one of those.
Well, there you go. The field trip is forming around us.
Fabulous.
You might have to get a bus.
Well, while you're doing this sexual exploration, there's a place down in the Homestead called the Outer Skin that's looking interesting to me that I haven't yet had a chance to visit.
Presumably from the name, we would expect it to be a rubber and leather goods store?
I believe just kind of general sexual stuff store, so I would expect like lingerie, sex toys such as dildos, vibrators, lubricants, and so forth, some rubber and the leather stuff because Stormy Leather lists them as a retailer on their webpage.
Now, in this day and age, are you expecting, how highbrow are you expecting this place to be? Because now this place on McKnight apparently is a very bright and shiny.
Lots of places are getting bright and shiny these days.
Larry Flint's most recent non-magazine innovation is a coffee shop that also sells dildos.
How interesting.
It looks exactly like a Starbucks, except for the big wall of merchandise.
Interesting.
I'm wondering how this kind of effort is going to take off.
Oh, I think it already has taken off. The sex stores that I go to are pretty much all at least trying to look reasonably highbrow and non-sleazy. And this was in large part initiated by places like Good Vibrations in San Francisco, which started off campaigning to be a clean, well-lit place for the sexual material.
But there's a difference between a clean place and a place that serves coffee and whatever else. I'm not sure that I'm really in the mood to... When I'm in the mood to purchase adult appliances, for lack of a better word, that I would...
Right, and you certainly wouldn't want to get like the creamer mixed up with
That could be an unfortunate mistake, yeah. But or not, depending on...
No, it's really... The creamer came out of the little plastic... Oh, no, wait, that's not a good judge either.
I don't see where there would be a great deal of overlap that... You know, I would go in to pick up a movie and say, oh, you know, I think I'll have some biscotti or something at the same time.
Don't you think this represents an interesting change to the whole production distribution mechanism? Do you think
it's taking it more mainstream?
People are really thinking about that this is something that can normalize the channels that they've previously been using.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're trying to see it. They're trying to attract new audience that way by saying this isn't just for dirty old men in trench coats, for lack of a better term.
Right. Couples can come in. What better way to say that than just like attract the couples first, right, and then sell them something?
Right. Yeah, the dirty old men in trench coats are always going to come in and they're always going to be there.
But you know, we are all dirty old men in trench coats.
I don't own a trench coat.
It's true that the sex places...
I don't know, big wool toggle coat, though. Is that good enough?
Yeah, you can borrow my trench coat.
Okay.
You should have gay trench coat day. That would be...
I'm not sure I really want to wear a trench coat. When we have, gay, tastefully dressed, fabulous little ensemble day or something.
It's true that these places are trying to appeal to women and to couples. To the question of coffee shops, I'm not quite sure I'm ready for a coffee shop. I can imagine getting to a point where I'd be comfortable with the local video rental place having a sex toy selection, presumably not for rent, but just for sale. I can see that working out.
I'd just like to share with our listeners, this is WRCT Pittsburgh, and broadcasting to the local metropolitan area for, more than half a century. We're actually almost out of time. I would like to thank all of my fabulous co-hosts for showing up tonight, and remember, next week is going to be a very special sex talk, because by then I will either be... Well, I'll either be in jail on some kind of trumped-up morals charge, or I'll have fabulous stories to tell you about the seedy underside of Murraysville.
And if you are in jail, that'll be fabulous, even more fabulous stories for the following week.
That's right. I'm going to be turned out by my cellmate, or whatever they call it. A punk. I think if you're a punk, that's jail terminology for being the sexual plaything of your cellmate. Anyway, thank you all for listening and calling in, and please tune in again next week. Good night.
Good night.
You're listening to a production of WRCT Public Affairs. The opinions contained within are solely those of the participants. Questions and comments can be addressed to WRCT Pittsburgh, 5000 Forbes Avenue, Pittsburgh, PA, or call 621-0728.
Cement shoes.